Tonight's meeting was introduced as a network meeting. However, I'm not going to speak about networks. What I'm going to speak about is, last year George asked me to take care of the install ports on the BSD cert box, and he asked me to keep an eye on them and upgrade them on a regular basis. And I agreed to do it, but I actually want to automate this thing so that it doesn't take a lot of my time. What I did, my plan was to periodically update the ports and the ports and the packages databases, periodically find and report which ports are out of date, and once I have that report, I run manually port upgrade. So let's see a bunch of scripts. So I have a script of four lines that sync the ports tree, and it simply calls CSUP with the subfile. And here I also rebuild the package and the ports database with package DB and ports DB2. That's everything which is shown here. It's executed on the BSD cert box in New York. And one of the reasons I wanted to do this meeting is so if something happens to me, you should have a written measurement of what's happening on that box. So the output of the syncing ports, I log it into a log file which is called the ports log. The next thing. I use port version, of course, to generate a report of which ports are out of date, and I just dump a header and a footer so that it looks nice in my when it sends email. I have some cron-tab tasks which run those scripts. The first one, the one that that syncs the ports tree, it executes every night at 1:15, and the other one, the one that generates a report with the outdated ports, it executes at 3 o'clock on every Thursday. Well, on every Thursday, so that when we get the email, we can discuss with George if there are any issues, and we resolve those issues, and I run the upgrade on during the weekend. Next, yes. Once I receive the list of outdated ports, I log in into the box shbsdcertny. I run port upgrade minus fav. So I first fetch the outdated ports. I read user ports updating document. I see if there is anything related with the ports I want to upgrade. And finally, I run sudo port upgrade minus AR, capital R, minus B. So minus B is for the backup, and the minus A option is to upgrade those ports. Now, if Apache is upgraded, I restart it. And there is a couple of other things which I do maintaining the box. I read the other periodic scripts, especially the ones which are generated by port audit. We had a couple of cases where there have been vulnerabilities in sudo, so I had to quickly upgrade it. And there were two warnings about Apache, which I had to apply the security fixes pretty quickly. And this consists my work on keeping the ports up to date. So far, business certification group is happy with me, and I'm glad to provide that service. That's everything, guys.
Yeah, question.
Yes.
With the Dash B, backup option.
Yes.
Have you ever had to restore the backup?
Nope. I never have problems, but you can't be too safe.
Sure.
What?
Well, there's an option. Go back as an appliance.
Yes. So here, when I run port upgrade, I provide this minus B option. minus the option stands for backup. So I've never seen a port being rolled out or
Is that what needs to be restored?
Yeah.
All that does, I think, is just takes whatever's in production and makes a package out of it.
All the restore consists of is going to package delete of the package that's not working for you, and going to package add of the package that's made part of that process.
Well, that's fine, but has anyone done it and had any problems?
Well, it's going to work just the same way it's doing a package add normally would work.
When you run it with that minus B option, there is a saying somewhere in the port upgrade output backing up that port and installing
it, here,
putting it somewhere. So if something happens, obviously you can restore it. But I've never experienced problems.
Yeah, it's just one thing to have a backup eventually, have a fail, or something. Restore it. I mean, if it doesn't work, it's in a restoration situation, it's worthless. So I was just wondering if anybody would come across that. I'm not surprised that he
had.
But
I've had it downgraded
ports. Yeah.
And every time I've done it, I've been in a fortunate position where the source out of the ports tree is one version, and the package happens to be a version behind. So it's literally moments.
Any other questions? No questions.
One of the things I noticed about it, because I played a little with your script and your method, is that the whole thing? That's not the whole thing. Good deal back?
Yes. That's the cron tab?
Yeah, actually, one of the sync of the reports takes an enormous amount of time to run.
Yes, and the reason is that I think the time's taken by package DB or bonds DB. I'm.
Oh, that's right. You run dash on package DB. You run what?
Minus U.
Oh, the UU.
Yeah.
Oh, right. That's why. Because I don't know if it's. I just run package. When I do it, I just run package DB, and don't worry about.
You know the book of Drew Levine, the thing about the BSD thing. It's actually the book recommends doing minus U option, and my fingers.
Of course, approved. Right. Okay.
Yes, and my fingers. I mean, it's muscle memory. I mean, I simply type minus U. I don't care. I'm not sure why I typed it, but except that it works, so it works fine. So if you want, I can take it out.
No, you can do anything you want.
Yeah. So which BSD are you doing this?
FreeBSD.
Okay.
But you can adapt it to whatever BSD you want. I mean, you can do it with package source on NetBSD. I'm pretty sure it will work.
Okay.
Anything else? Nope. Let's close it.
Oh, you can just hit escape.
Okay.
Hi. Okay, you're going to talk about jail?
Networking topics.
Jail
Okay, Len.
Hey! Okay, so this is going to be real fast, high-level use of lag. How many people have used WAG? Okay, how many people have used...
I'm playing Doom or in general.
How many people have used OpenBSD Funk? Okay, nobody. Okay, so here's the deal. A systems engineer, a systems administrator. I worry too much. I think a lot about, this is a picture of a data center that was burned and caught on fire. And I worry a lot about other people I work with. This dude up in here, we were working together, unplugged wires. I'd unplugged his wires. He worried about me. You know, and there's all kinds of scenarios for all kinds of failure, which you know, we have a short period of time tonight. But the big point is,
everything fails. Everything in my life has always failed. Every piece of hardware, software has failed. Everything failed. So, got a little obsessed with failure, you know, years ago, and it's done me well. So, including switches now. So this is an often overlooked thing, and I've had a lot of switches fail on me. Surprise. And they're typically things that in networks, no matter how grand or awesome, are things that people think of as a piece of equipment that never fails. Why would it? And mostly servers fail, of course, right? I mean, people fail. I mean, okay, so, Lattice, if you want to have a really resilient, you know, design for your network and server topology, everybody, can everybody see parts of this to kind of get the gist?
Yes.
You're back there, you got your IP routing, here's you know, a nasty WAN, the internet or something. Here's these bridge firewalls, here's servers, and here's an X pattern, okay? Each one of these servers has two routes out, and two routes out to, and at least two, right? Routes out. So this is completely redundant. The idea in this design is that any of these components can fail and everything can continue to function. Now, in a talk about jail years ago, I was talking about, you had to get the slide in. It was a bet. I won the bet. Sick possibilities is what this was, a slide like, ooh, lots of UC stuff, lots of jails, lots of cool, redundant, blah, 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 all this fun. And I was doing all this junk with popping IPs back and forth between machines where there were jails running and blah, blah, blah. And Ocon said,
have you ever used Trunk?
No, what's that? That's awesome.
It's like, it's kind of new. It's an OpenBSD. And it was really cool.
And then Lag came along. It was FreeBSD 6.3 and appeared shortly after. It was awesome. And at this point, they're nearly identical in feature set, say the man pages. Actually living with both of them, well, I haven't lived with Trunk. So I've screwed around with it. That doesn't count. I've lived with Lag. So in a network that was designed, a network designed that never saw the light of day, I realize it's tough to see all the wires back there, but we have a three-tiered layer cake of a front network zone, app server zone, database zone, switches in between, everything fully redundant, right? So we're going to talk, you know, the switching layer, we can make our switches redundant by binding them together with LACP. It's real cheap. It's real, real easy. And all that does is share what between the switches? Anybody? Yes?
Broadcast domain?
Who said what?
I said ARC.
Yes. And get you a drink. Awesome. Okay, so ARC tables. So you really just want to share your ARC tables. Okay, so Lag, let's zoom in on this thing for a second. So we got a switch here, we got a switch there, and they're going up to some router we won't talk about. And both, you know, we're plugged into both of these physical switches on our server. This is where Lag lives. Everybody with me so far? All right, bingo. And every server for years, even the cheapest, smallest little server, has two NICs on the back. I mean, this is just easy. All right, so back to this design. There are two documents that are all you need to deal with Lag stuff. One, man page, and second, this really good page on network aggregation in general in the FreeBSD handbook. So here's what you need to do Lag. You need to either build the kernel device Lag into your kernel, or you need to load it in your rcconf, right?
Loader conf.
It's loader conf?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Yes.
Still
loader dom. I will. Excuse me while I edit my slides real quick. Okay, so, you know, in a regular,
loader dom,
it's really hard to read. Can anybody see this if config?
It's bright fluorescent pink on my screen down here.
FX0?
You
can't
see it.
We can't see it, but it's
tight,
not so much.
Put your lighter
in there.
Okay,
so.
You know, back here in the cheap seats, illegible.
Illegible. All right. Well, you know,
Yeah.
There.
That's better.
Keep things. Yeah. Do we have colors? Colors.
White works. Yeah, white works really well.
Yeah, it does. Sweet. Okay. Hey, read that.
Yes. Cowabunga.
All right.
So, that looks really familiar to everybody, right?
Yep.
All right, A network interface. All right, this looks a little less familiar.
It's more pink. I'm just going to just make it white and call it a day.
The kill this?
Yeah. So,
could you change that to a word that kind of put in this room or colorblind?
Should not be left
as is. Okay, so here's the big wild difference between that one-liner to set an IP on an Ethernet interface and this WAG config to do the same thing across two. If you config FXP0 up, FXP1 up, you got to bring these both up. We'll get to later. Clone interfaces. It's kind of like making a GIF interface or something. You make a lag interface. And then you run fconfig on that lag interface. A couple important things. They're all in different colors in the next slide. I'm just going to point it out, so we'll just do it white. Lag proto failover. Lag port, FXP0. We're going to grab that one that we lit earlier. Lag port, FXP1. We're going to grab the next one we put earlier. And our IP address. Anybody have any questions about why this? Yeah.
How many interfaces can you bind together? Does it depend on the protocol?
I would assume there's probably, I have never tried, I would assume there's a limit somewhere under 255, depending on the how many interfaces can you bind together?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay.
I actually had a question for you, believe it or not, which is when you break it up, which one becomes the primary? Is the first one in the list, or is it the lowest number of ones?
Ah, in general, I found it is the first one in the list.
Okay.
I can't confirm any rhyme or reason to that, though. I don't. I'm not thought too deeply about it. You guys can come up here and try it in a minute. They have a working demo. Okay. Do you have access to a machine that runs FreeBSD, sir?
Hey, where's my Mac, right?
Shadow and pedal. Do it. Okay, so, yeah, the next set of slides is all bright colors on my screen, I swear to God, but it's just explaining what it is. Just explain. Now, can anybody see what it says over on the far right over there?
It's load balance.
The first one was what? Failover?
Failover.
Okay, so failover, load balance.
LACP.
Beck. Which is Cisco Ethernet channel stuff. I don't know anything about that stuff. That is awesome. All right, so we're just going to talk about these three real quick. In the same scenario where we have one server, two switches, failover, load balance, round robin, which one, anybody want to take a stab at which one I'm going to say is nice to start with a LACP
failover?
Failover. Why?
Well, you look at TCP, you can screw it up.
Bingo.
What?
Yes.
Load balance for round robin TCP, and you don't do it based on the port, and you spray TCP packets randomly through switches, and they will show up out of order, and they will destroy your TCP performance.
Yep.
And UDP wouldn't have more.
UDP is not. Well, it depends on the application protocol.
So you're all set. Okay, so, yes.
What about troubleshooting?
What about troubleshooting it?
I mean, failover seems to be the easiest.
Yes, absolutely failover is the easiest. So load balance and round robin become incredibly tricky to actually diagnose what in the world is going on and where the packets are going.
That's not limited.
There's one thing, though, that's really important about load balance and round robin that's really interesting. Load balance and round robin will both accept packets on either interface coming in, whereas failover will not. All right. Except there's one really cool sysctl added in 8.2, which allows you to net link lag failover receive all. So it's a zero or a one. So you can choose to receive packets on both interfaces, or one or the other. Right. Now, there's different scenarios that you can talk about and consider where you have much fancier switching topologies and gear. Stuff like backplanes, switches in a big backplane, switches with some kind of fiber channel thing on the back. there's all kinds of different topologies, so it's worth experimenting with these things depending on what you're doing with your switching topology. So now you know everything you need to go out and light up a bunch of redundant network stuff.
And make pretty lights.
And make pretty lights. So it's live demo time, all right? And live demo time is going to do work like...
I get a question.
Yes.
You bring your axe or hatch it or whatever it is.
Which axe?
It's so 2004.
That's a card.
Yeah. Every DOD paper's from that one.
Where are we at? All right, so, hold on, we just redid this network right before.
Can you round robin and load down?
She's fucking crazy.
I'm sorry,
hold on one second.
Can you do load balance and round robin?
It's on the same network, yeah. So the question is, can you do load balance and round robin when you're connected to two separate switches? Yes. But this is going to create a tremendous amount of confusion for your switches. If you think about what happens to the packet, let's go back to the talk real quick. This, I'm glad somebody asked for a split second. We'll go back to...
I've only done those when you're connected to the same switch to aggregate.
Okay, so if you're connected to separate switches and you're going to do load balance or random robin, think about what's happening to the packets in a stream. You've got a packet flying, a CSP packet flying out one side, and the switch is now taking the IP address and part of this side interface over here, and passing your packet along. The next packet that comes out, say it comes out on the other side now, now the switch, the IP has flipped over to the other side. The ARP has changed. The switches are going to have to communicate this over LACP, and suddenly that LACP communication gets awful noisy, and you start getting a lot of confusion, and you're going to get a lot of all kinds of wacky stuff about which way do I send this packet, right?
So it's not on the same broadcast domain.
What if you have them separated? But
then you're not using the same IP address. Yeah, That doesn't jive with this at all.
So both of those aggregation modes, you're really talking about connecting to the same switch or something that has a unified.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. So if you're going to trunk something for throughput, for example, load balance, round robin, which is not typically the model I care so much about, because faster NICs, tune your network. I care about stuff breaking, because it all breaks on me. You can totally take all the NICs on your box, put them in a load balance or round robin config, shove them into one switch, and saturate as much of the throughput through that switch as possible. The realities of how well that works for actually, like, I don't know, are 2 gigabit NICs actually 2 gigabits of, there's a lot of overhead in actually doing the struggling act, so I'm going to say, results may vary.
It's so infrequently the bottleneck that it gets overblown in terms of importance.
All right, so over here, live demo time. Let me see, we're pinging, wow, all right, so who's familiar with ping? Yes. Okay. Who's familiar with ARPing? Anybody? It's real simple. Okay. So ARPing shows the ARP of the actual the address. Can you see this in the back?
Yeah.
This is sending ARP solicitation.
ARP ping does a little bit more than that, but I think it is just... No, I think it probably just is ARP solicitation. I've never really got with you for that. How is that played? Anyways, what we're doing is we're watching this thing talking to one MAC address. Now, this is where the, dog and pony show magic trick vaudeville acts comes in. And we're going to take the Sophos box that's acting as the server on the bottom. And nothing up my sleeve. We are going to, let me see, unless I'm plugged into something, hold on a sec, we are going to replace the cables. All right, so I'm going to pull one of the cables out. I'm going to pull out the primary. Let's see if this thing changes. Oh, that was on the. That was the primary.
Flashlights.
Let's see. Hold on. I just flipped it back the other way.
There was a little bit of lag in there.
Was there? Hold on.
Sorry.
It's okay. The joke was a little slow too.
Oh, I get you.
Slow.
You can't get a joke in on a guy while he's trying to do it. Right. Hold on.
Nothing's on fire. Give us time.
Well, let's pretend it's. Yeah, but somebody's waiting for you guys to start throwing eggs and shit.
We can throw eggs. Why do you
It's on the Friday night event.
It's because we never made mistakes in tech.
We can burp for
a Okay, so I just switched out all the cables. Let's do this thing. Hey! Alright. Switched out all the cables on the back of this box. We still have ping. We're not losing anything. Alright, now let's take one of these guys and unplug it.
And nothing happens.
Hey, the little light is still blinking, so look at that. Let's unplug both of them. Now we lost it. Oh boy. Let's see if we come back. Yay, we're back.
So that's a primary.
Now we're plugging the pink one in, we're unplugging now the purple. Little jump there. Gold soaker's next. But hey, it works. That's it. End of demo. Anybody want to come plug or unplug the cable?
Since I haven't gotten a new prescription for my glasses, when you plug the master, you're in failover mode, right?
Yes.
When you plug the master back in, it goes back to the master.
Switch
it back, right?
Back to primary?
Yeah, let's jump into the host. Well, that'll...
Let us know. It's a slippery spot.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's okay.
No.
It's not like carp where you have to go in by hand and switch back, right?
Nope. It is not like carp where you have to go in and switch back by hand. Although you can,
you can do that, but it's not the default in carp.
No. And SSH is trying to look up and resolve my name on the network. Demo fails. Yes, Mark.
What about if you want to manually fail over without, logging in and run something fail over?
You know, I don't believe that there's any facility.
What do you mean?
Down the interface.
Okay.
Basically,
there's a special framework you have to install from ports. And then you have
Ruby.
Right. Yeah. He uses Ruby. That's right.
Ruby no threads.
Okay, hey, we're in. We're into Biggie. Okay, so if you look at the lag output actually down here for scripts and other fun stuff, down at the bottom, this thing actually gets into, it shows you which port is active. I don't know if you can read this, but right now VR0, the first port that I specified in the RC comp, is the active, or is listed in by fconfig as the active. I'm going to unplug that guy. I'm still pinging it in another term. Let's see here. Did that just change? Bingo!
Active
just came flat, this little active tag came flapping up to VR1, but master is still marked on VR0.
So can you change the flag to make another one of master?
That
was part of the initial configuration.
Well, if you change the RC comp and run net in again.
But then you'd be reconfiguring the interface.
Oh, you mean on the fly doing it?
Well, yeah, you down it and you bring it back up.
FCRCD.
Now it is.
Now we're plugged back in and we're back to master active for VR Zero.
That's straightforward. Let's unplug VR One and see if it actually gives us anything. Okay, so an interesting thing. If you unplug VR One, that link is now dead. Right?
You are not transparent.
If I had a script now that was asking me if VR One is dead, let me see if I have anything else in ifconfig. It said nothing, it didn't change at all. Let me see if there's anything else in ifconfig. Anything else? VR Zero is still marked as, it said active. Okay, so VR One status no carrier. So there's nothing in the lag interface that says it, but VR One is marked as a dead Ethernet interface. So it's worth screwing around if you're making tools to monitor this stuff. Yes, quick question. Yes. What is it?
Show the config.
Oh, show the config? Okay. I spent all afternoon making it pretty. Let me see here. So the config doesn't look too much different than before. Here we're
right. This line is. This is commented out, and this is just a straight if config line for one of the interfaces, just to compare it to the actual 1, 2, 3, 4 lines that it takes to make the lag interface.
Not zero.
I changed it just to be.
Oh, no.
Yeah. They're all VRs.
EN driver. Is there an EN driver?
EN?
I'm a back conductor.
Yeah. There's the RC comp. This is set up in failover mode. That's pretty much it. So I won't pour everybody, unless anybody has any more last questions, and after we're done, after the other guys are done, I'll leave this stuff up here if anybody wants a shell on this to just like, hey, let's hose it.
Why not? Your ifconfig to lag, what are the values that can show up with the virtual interface or the physical interface? Do we have master, active, or whatever?
I believe it's master active. There might be some other vocabulary thrown in for, I don't know if anybody else has any experience with this stuff, with the FEC or the Cisco Ether channel stuff, or any of the other other modes.
Can the lag interface have sub-interfaces?
Repeat that.
Can the lag interface have sub-interfaces?
Yes.
Sub-interfaces meaning?
VLAN. Yeah.
Oh, VLAN. Yes, absolutely. It acts just like any other. Your lag interface is no different than any other interface.
Did you ever try to pick a plug from outside and see how...
Can I actually throw one creepy one out for you? But you run into all kinds of, you better have your head on straight if you're doing this, or you're going to be really tripping balls when it breaks. You can have lag interfaces between two servers and then run CARP's IP addresses across the lag interfaces, right? So you best be thinking straight if you're going to attempt this kind of stupidity.
Did you ever see?
I obviously wasn't. So
did you ever watch the effect of a pink flood with the round robin? I'm sorry.
Yeah, go for it. Go
with the failover. Did you ever watch actually the effect and how it deals with that?
No, but let's get another drink after the. Okay. The other guys are done, and we'll just do it.
The back address, does it choose it from the master interface, or?
Good question. I believe.
I
believe.
Go back to the ARPANET.
The MAC address is tied to the physical.
Yeah, I was going to say it flashed back.
It chooses the MAC address of the master, and it uses it on both, right?
No, it should change based on what the interface is.
Well, hold on.
No, that's what's creeping me out. It didn't. It should. But just a minute ago, the ARPANET.
You actually have
both VR have the virtual MAC.
You may have a virtual MAC and just could be bargaining to dump it over either.
Virtual MAC would be very bad.
Yeah, but...
Okay, MAC 000024 CB.
CA28.
I'm looking at this.
You know what, it actually has a different one.
CA28 is...
CBCA28.
Yeah, what's CA28?
Yeah, it's the top, it's the first interface. Let's unplug that first interface.
Yeah.
Yeah.
VR0 and
VR1
are the same.
No, they're all 5.1. One day one speed on the last dot.
No,
no, they're not.
VR0 and VR1 are both the same.
No, 2A. Yeah, they're both exactly the same. VR1 and VR0 are the same MAC address.
That's a manufacturing defect.
No way.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've heard of that.
Sorry. But both NICs have the same MAC.
Yeah. Both NICs have the same MAC. No wonder it has so many problems with this machine.
Yeah, that's
the problem. Something's gone wrong.
It's a violation of the protocol.
Yep. Huh. Hey, did you hack your MAC address changes or something?
No.
You sure you didn't do anything?
Absolutely sure.
Can you go to the other servers and see if it's the same way?
Which one?
Well, yeah, look at the other side.
Oh, the other side. The other side, hold on, is CA2A, CA2B. So VR2 and 3 are different MAC addresses, but 0 and 1 are these identical MAC addresses. Mm-hmm. That is super creepy. Okay.
So do you go with the other one? Or?
I wonder if it's set it. You can change the MAC address of a...
You can still do it if your finger on it, though, with the MAC address.
Yeah, I could.
That's it.
The BF sense boxes.
Go in there and see if there's anything fucking with the MAC address.
Maybe that's why you get no internet.
Actually, be curious to see what's in your ARP tables, too.
Maybe that's why you're destroying the internet.
We should look at your ARP tables, too.
So we have to...
Who you can't stop on with the ARP tables?
Nah, all been brought to let you root. Let's see, our interfaces, come on, interfaces.
No, interfaces status. On the left.
Bingo.
Oh.
Status and diagnostics, awful close. Especially when you're showing
now
you
it's
see
it. Record.
Now it's going, wait, I do. MAC address is the same on different interfaces.
Yeah. Yes.
So it looks like when it does...
go for it.
The first interface that you add as a primary, it takes that interface as the lag MAC address and writes it on all the other fucking all the child interfaces.
That's
fine. All right, here is the same Ethernet.
That's when you take that out the lag, it restores the original MAC address.
This is probably one of the reasons why you can't change it after it's been
configured.
The switch will always see you as the same.
Yeah, the switch
has the same hardware address.
Right.
Right.
That's kind of
the switch.
It might be part of the OCP, in fact. It might be part of the protocol that actually specifies that for all
Interesting. Okay. So I'm going to stop on this.
Is it broken?
Yeah, this is broken. So. Say what?
Did you ever try this in a mixed environment? Let's say you had bonding a Linux talking to a FreeBSD with the lag interface.
Yes.
And it worked fine like you expect.
If you kept things conservative and you stuck to failover, you had a lot less headache. Yes, it worked as expected.
Failover is a unique case, by the way.
Yeah.
Right, round robin, and anything that sprays packets across those interfaces is a unique case.
And the I will say the only problem in that mixed environment, and I don't want to get all like trash talking or well save it for the other meeting, is find me a band page for bond that makes sense for any Linux distro. Like that became like the biggest problem is this who's on first of how the hell to configure the interfaces.
My favorite part about bond is the claim it's enslaved.
Is the command is a what?
Enslave.
Enslave, yes, 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 yes. The jealous of jail, that's all. The jealous of jail of it, okay.
Well, I think it's a whole different dynamic.
Hold on.
Just one comment. You don't actually need the highest flag load. So if you have some interfaces, we'll see that the lag interface and all the loads of lag. Which is why if you put it right in a comp, it works anyway.
But was it in your kernel? It must have been already in your kernel then. Because I think it means the driver.
No, no, no. If you have the clone interface variable, when you go to clone interface, it can take all the loads, I have to store whatever. So if you have a lag, it will look for I have lagging all the loads. You don't need to tell the random load at all.
So you can do this in one line.
Yeah,
the handbook is wrong. But you do have to create the lag interface in the system.
Yeah, yeah. Doing that will basically auto load the module for you.
You don't even have to load it.
So the handbook is wrong. All right. All right, so cloned interfaces is auth. We don't have to specify cloned interfaces?
No, no, you do that.
Okay,
no,
you do that.
No, loader conf.
Nothing in loader.com, but you know what?
You don't have to load.
Bad test, because I built it into the kernel, so.
So then you don't need to.
I'm just going
to
test it. Okay, so we'll test that. Anybody want to stick around for the next 15 hours while I recompile the kernel in the sober box?
We'll do that test
if any of us are sober enough. Okay, so any other last questions? Mark.
Silly question. Can you use lags say, put two JRE tunnels together, or a JRE tunnel and a physical interface, or something silly like that? Say you have a big warehouse, and you've got a fiber optic cable that goes from one side to the other, and you want failover, and you'll just see the failover over the internet. So say, like, some forklift driver cuts your fiber optic cable.
I got one for you.
Yeah.
If you want to come over to my house this weekend, I'll totally be like, your sober guide on this journey, and we'll do this together.
But in all seriousness, though, can you use like a pseudo interface with lag, or is it tied to like real physical interfaces?
What is it?
Equal cross multipath is a new type of routing that's in relatively recent, originated previously. So you can have a route that points to two interfaces.
Equal cost multipath.
Right. So, awesome. So the cost of the path is now the same. Right.
Is that like borrowing from OSPF?
No, it's just a
way
setting routing protocols come up with. You gotta, if you have a routing table that has more than one leaf, that has a list as a leaf, as opposed to a single entry, then you can, when you get down to the bottom, go, okay, well, this can either go over FXP0 or FXP1 or FXP2 or FXP3, depending on how long the list is. And if that interface FXP0 is down, then it just goes to the next thing in the list. It's like, okay, well, this is the same next hop, and we share these in the next hop, so that if your forklift driver drives over your fiber, then FXP1.
Nice.
So that should enhance lag. That should enhance lag, though, functionally, right? I mean,
there should have no, because then
here, for example, you have like two NICs on the same card or on the same motherboard. But what if one of your NICs is a lag interface on the motherboard? Another one is attached by a USB NIC, and that would be the
USB port. It doesn't matter. Yeah, that functions. And I was just going to say the link aggregation page in the handbook actually gives an example of, so you have a wireless backup link, a Wi-Fi something, and an Ethernet link.
Wireless
is like, right. Yeah. So it does work.
Yeah, great.
That's that.
Cool.
Any other? All right, thank you. Good job.
Henry speaking, 20-minute break. 30-minute break? 30. I'm just fucking. We're carrying on the children from
You want to just, do you want this up here? I got power.
No, I don't need it.
You sure you don't need it? And I got the same.
I got the door. Okay. I need help. Okay. Can everybody hear that?
Wow.
All right, so this is a
wow. Fish gone bad.
This is a cookie with carp. Most of you are probably familiar with carp, running the most popular PSN. Everyone probably runs it at home or crazy enough to run it in production. Carp, what is it? Common address redundancy protocol. What does that mean? Essentially, it's sharing one IP address over multiple hosts. That's about it. All right.
Clap.
Next. All right. Where did carp come from? Carp originally came from a need for OpenBSD wanting a carp type protocol, but none that were available at the time were in open. They were patented. VRRP, which was the Virtual Router Redundancy Protocol, was patented by IETF, and also Hot Standby Router Protocol was patented by Cisco. OpenBSD developers didn't like either of them, mostly because A, they didn't support IPv6 at the time, and also they were insecure. They sent their passwords in clear text, and OpenBSD developer says, that's pretty shitty.
Or do you mean the developers were insecure?
Alright, that works too. It was made available in OpenBSD in 2003 and brought into FreeBSD 5.4 in 2005.
I thought there was no 5 branch in FreeBSD.
We don't talk about that.
It's not spoken
of in public.
It was made available in FreeBSD at one point.
Yes, alright. I thought it went from 4 to 6, that's
what
I said.
I came across an old mailing list when the carp was first introduced. One of the main developers, Ryan McBride, made a funny little quote at the end of his first introduction to the OpenBSD mailing list. P.S. If anyone has concerns about Cisco's patent 5 yada yada and how their claim that applies to VRP has forced us to design our own incompatible protocol, don't talk to us. Instead, call Cisco's lawyer at 408 yada or email him at robertbarr@cisco.com, which is very fun. All right, requirements for carp. You can compile into the kernel with device carp, or you can load the module in loader and bootloader, but I don't remember the actual flag for it. You also need a virtual host ID, which sets a carp group, a virtual IP address, which is your IP address that you're going to be sharing across both hosts, a virtual hardware address, which you'll create, which is essentially your carp address, and a password, which is the password you're going to send between hosts. Okay. So here's our setup for the host that we're going to do. So my VHID, I'm going to set it to 1. My virtual IP address will be 192.168.1.2. I'm going to create a virtual hardware address named carp1, and I'm going to create the password as nice bug. So let's see this in action. All right, very easy setup. All I have to do is run as root ifconfig carp1 create, which is what I set. My previous slide, and then I'm going to actually configure the address. So what I'm setting is I'm creating a carp address. I'm setting the carp group ID to 1. I'm creating a password as nicebug, and I'm giving it the IP address and net max till this is on. You can type, you can use, do it in this format, you actually type net mask 255.255, whatever. And then I'm also, then I'm giving out a printout, what do I actually see after I send this device? So I see, it's creating device, CARP1. You see the IP address that I created it, it's net mask. And you could also see this important thing here that by default it's set to NASA. This is the first host that I'm sending this at. B1, this is advertised base one. This is the amount of time in seconds that CARP will advertise itself over the network. Default is one, and then add skew, this is advertising skew. How many seconds I'm gonna skew the advertised base, which I'm not going to since this is my master. If you want this to be enabled on boot, you have to edit rc.com with the following flag, with the following values, and it's pretty much just doing the same thing. Alright, so that's host A. Now let's go to host B. So pretty similar. We're going to create a CARP address, CARP1. The VHID has to be the same. Because you create a different VHID, it's going to not know what group it's part of. So the VHID is pretty much the CARP group. I'm setting the password as nice bug, but here I'm setting the advertising skew to 100, which this will what this does is this advertises CARP less frequently than the other hosts. So host A is advertising every 1 second. Host B is advertising, this is probably about whatever, like 1.3, 1.4 seconds. So the master host will always advertise first, and it's always going to pick up the traffic first. And I'm also displaying what I'm seeing on CARP1, and as I see, since my advertisement skew is higher, this comes up as backup. The same thing if you want to send in the boot, give it the same flags.
What is it advertising?
It's advertising over multicast that it is the lowest. It is the primary receiver for this IP address.
The master has to advertise more often than anyone else on the link.
Right.
That's why the non-master, or the, it's not really a slave, but so the master has an advertising skew of one.
Yes.
And that's why the other hosts that are not primaries have a higher advertising skew, because the agreement in the protocol is based on the loudest broadcaster. It's actually a very OpenBSD style protocol. The person who talks loudest wins.
Okay, so that's not, it's not, it's just talking to other person.
Okay.
By the way, I had to fix this protocol recently, so I have some things to say about it, but keep going.
Okay. You should be giving this talk, not me. So that's about it. That's our basic CARP setup for two hosts. You can set multiple hosts, so if I had a host C, I can do that as well. All I have to do is set the advertising skew to higher than 100. So if I want to be the third in the chain, I can set it to 101 or 150.
Is there a limit to the skew?
255. Caveats. CARP is not great for non-stateless protocols, things like HTTP, FTP. If you're in the middle of a download and your CARP interface goes down, there's going to be a little, your download is going to get interrupted. You refresh your browser, refresh the connection, it'll go to the other server. It can be combined with lag interfaces, like I mentioned before, however, only in failover mode. If you try any of the other fancier modes in lag, it does not work, it confuses CARP and causes you lots of headaches, which I experienced couple weeks ago. More info. Check out the CARP man page, read the handbook about CARP, and of course read the source. And there's also these will be posted on the NiceBug website.
Sure.
There's a OpenBSD guys created a little song about CARP. There's this link/lyrics and have a little song about all their
wants to be free.
Little yeah. And that's it. The end. Any questions? Probably go to that guy.
Yeah. So actually, one quick comment, which is that the latest version of TCP dump will allow you to debug CARP because not only did OpenBSD decide to design a new protocol, setting quotes, but they stole the assigned number from BRRP. So if you tried to use Fidelity Speedup to debug CARP, you would know what was going on.
Right, because if you do these up now, you'll see BRRP is coming back as a protocol.
Well, none of that, but the protocol fields are all wrong. So I fixed with PCAP and GSpeedUp, and in the upcoming version of GSpeedUp, there will be proper support for the CARP. That's why I'm looking at CARP.
Cool. That's all I got. Anybody else?
A number?
I don't know if that is, you don't have to pay for it.
Do you have to pay for IANA number? George, do you have to pay IANA for the board member assignment or not?
So the IANA thing was an argument that they had a bunch of years ago, and I don't even go into that because I've already written about it. We are currently working, I'm currently working with a couple of people who go to IETF meetings, I don't go to IETF meetings, to get a proper number assigned for CARP, so the CARP and BRRP don't overlap.
It's free, isn't it?
There's no price, you simply have to go and act like an adult.
Oh, that's true.
So we have some adults who are going to the IGF to talk to people, and we'll get a different number. And the space is there, they just did it basically to be ticked to the system.
That's all I got.
That's a good thing.
Makes
the bugging hard. Talks about Etsy services, don't worry.
Etsy protocols.
Yes,
any other questions? Comments? Concerns?
We clap down.
Yeah. A little blue. It's Mr. Bushwick.
Shit. Do you know maybe we ran out of time?
We'll make time for you.
We can actually save it if you want.
No, I'm good.
You want to
save it? I get it.
Okay.
We haven't talked about DJB,
right? Okay. No, it's a DJB section in the meeting. All those fly-by-night startup guys, you know. I thought he changed the license a few years ago, but I didn't know actually how the license was changed. That's why he answered the email.
It's not licensed. It's public domain. It's just in the public domain.
Right, but when he went from the DJB license to that,
yeah.
It was a few years ago. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Oh.
I got it?
America's new RCB.
I'm Matt, if I look familiar, I talked last month. I told George if he was desperate, I'd give a talk on XPyTCP, and here we are. So who knows what XPyTCP is? Anyone? So
larger than a dog.
I assume all of you, both of you, have used it because you were forced to.
Yes.
Okay. XPyTCP is written by the enemy, I guess. Bernstein wrote this. It stands for the Unix Client Server Program Interface. The Unix part of that might be controversial coming from him. But it's basically a standard for specifying program interfaces for clients and servers that are uniform across protocols. So XPyTCP is an implementation by Bernstein of the XPy suite for TCP. It's the only one he's done. His followers have done other ones. Yeah, I think that's the preferred term is followers. Is this being it's recorded? All right. Anyway, so just so you know why I'm giving pause. If you Google for friends of DJB, my boss is the number one link that pops up. All right. So TCP server is basically a server that will exec a series of arguments that are passed in its tail. So TCP server will bind to a address port combination and will listen and accept and then fork. So when you use TCP server, it looks like this. This is pretty much the simplest program. This is a program that just listens on port 9999 on localhost and cats your Mach-E to the socket. So yeah, localhost, that's your address, IP, or domain name will work, and yes, it does work with fine. I think maybe in the next version he'll make it only work with tiny DNS, but we'll see.
Standards-based, huh? Keep it standard.
I mean, all standards are deficient compared to truth.
Burns in glory, as it were.
So, I actually, just disclaimer, hate this asshole, love this program. Anyway, so that's the port. The port is the one that you can't see is highlighted because it's bad. And that's a program. And so to be clear, this program is not like, it's not like an RC comp. This isn't a shell syntax like string. It's just a series of arguments that get parsed and passed into system, I think, and system actually sends them back to shell. But so this -c5 is a concurrency setting. So that says the max times I can, the max number of forks I can have running concurrently behind this instance of TCP server. So if I get popular by BSD standards or DJB standards, I want to max out to 5. So this is one really nice feature right out the gate. Does anyone here still use INETD? I'm sorry. If you still use INETD, TCP server has a very nice option. If you want to bind to a privileged port, if you're in like completely down in the shit and you need to duct tape something out there and just banner out something to your users saying, I went to shoot over the weekend, I plugged my computer in for 4 minutes and shit. You know, you can bind to a privileged port, and after you bind to the privileged port, it will use MQID GID to set the UID, the effective UID and GID of the service. This is very DJB, to be minimalist and to sacrifice interface for the sake of the implementation, you can't send a username or a group name because that would have been two more lines. So you have to send the UID and GID. So this is basically how TCP server works. You have you bind, you listen, you enter an accept loop. Every time you accept, you fork, you dupe. The sock is a standard in, standard out. So instead of having half duplex socket file descriptor, you now have sort of a spoof of a full duplex, so it's more like a pipe. And then your program, the arrows aren't showing here, but your program, you read from standard in, you write to standard out. And these behind the scenes are actually the same file descriptor that's just masking the fact that you're talking to a socket. You treat it like a pipe. So you can set any Unix filter you can throw behind TCP server and it will just work, more or less. So TCP client's a little more complicated. TCP client is the client side. There are another probably 12 or 15 programs that ship with this suite. I don't think it's in ports. It doesn't have man page. It's in ports?
It's in ports.
Okay, I did man pages for them out of duress. But
who's paid what, right?
Yeah, you're good. Yeah. So TCP client and TCP server are the main ones. There's a replacement for curl that supports no options and doesn't support HTTP 1.1 called HTTP ACK. I don't recommend it. But these are the main two programs. There's another good program in there called ARGV0, which is actually a nifty one. ARGV0, you say ARGV0, the real program, what I want the program to appear as in the process list, and then my arguments, and it'll change the name. So if you have a bunch of TCP servers running in your production systems and you want a PS for them, you can use this program to set the proc listing.
SVScan, though, is still in this suite, right?
SVScan's in Daemon Tools.
Oh,
and,
sorry.
We're going to leave that one alone for now.
It's been a long time. I thought it was part of this suite.
So, Anyway, TCP client is the client side of this. So unlike TCP server, which gets the socket on standard in, standard out, TCP client, per the OOXPI standard as required by OOXPI, reads from file descriptor 6 and writes to file descriptor 7. Next slide. So this is the TCP client program, MOTD app. And this just grabbed the MOTD from our MOTD share program. And so what you have here is sh-c, ticks, cat, and then redirects 6 right in there. The reason I'm not reading here and I'm executing for cat, just two talks ahead here, is that read doesn't work with non-ASCII, doesn't play well with non-ASCII, and cat will just read bytes. So it's worth the exec. Read in corn doesn't. It doesn't in batch either.
What about C-shell?
I don't know. I do know that the POSIX specification says read expects text. And then it says nothing about things that aren't text. And then if you talk to the guy who maintains bash about null bytes, that's a fun conversation that I had. You can look that one up on the internet. So, again, we have a host here. We have a port here. It doesn't work over domain sockets. It's only TCP over IP. And then we're executing this program. So the reason we have to do the sh-c is because file descriptor 6 is what we're reading from. And if we just redirect outside of cat here, then TCP client will try to read from file descriptor 6 as it's standard in. And most likely what you'll get there is bad file descriptor 6. The reasoning for this, I'll just pause for a second, the reasoning for the 6.7 is because you can have a TCP client program that's in the middle of a pipeline, and you might want to do things with standard in and standard out that aren't just shooting, you know, directly talking to the server and directly talking to, and directly getting responses back. It's useful sometimes. It's a pain in the ass most of the time. But it's a good reason to learn how to do file descriptor redirection in shell. And so this is what we get back when we run my MOTD program. This is my current MOTD, and you can see why I was worried that it might get popular. All right. So this is the client program. It's a little more complicated. You connect, you dupe the SOC on the read side to 6, you dupe the SOC on the write side to 7, you exec. Standard in, standard out are duped into the client program, and then file descriptors 6 and 7 communicate with an external server, and 0 and 1 go into your pipeline. So I wrote a little server that's a little more complicated than a client that just does man pages over the internet, because it would infuriate DJB if he saw this, and okay.
That would be good.
Sure.
It's an HTTP server that listens over port 50 for me.
Well, it's not HTTP.
It runs in a follow.
Although he does, there is a program that ships with this called add carriage return and remove carriage return. Because it's a C program.
Oh, it's DOS to units.
Yeah, it's not TR-D carriage return, but you know.
We'll see
if I can get this to work.
I
got about 5%
battery left. Alright.
You can plug into my, I got 2% battery. Find it.
No, I'm saying try to get the wireless.
So, I got like 43. So it's like 3 minutes.
Or he's done. Laptop?
Well, no, the phone.
Same
plan too,
well.
Get
okay. Do you need a
iPad?
No. You have a...
I have a multi-adapter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plug in
as well.
That's
yours.
Oh, someone stole my bag.
Hold on, listen.
That's fine.
I still got
those. Oh, I lost my session as well.
Mine's low.
All right, we'll just scrap the live demo because Oh, wait, never mind.
Now you want to charge?
No, I'm okay.
Well, you got, like, you got like the S&M adapter thing.
We good?
Well, no, yeah, it's kind of nice. It's like a clogger. Oh, sorry. Stop the play.
I think
none. You get reached
with
six. Working? Yeah, I can't see where I'm typing, but... There we go.
Yay!
Hey!
All
right.
What is it doing?
So
besides client and server.
Server, yeah. Client. The server's already running, so what it does is it just takes a line, it takes one line in, so it reads out the new line, and it takes a section in the page and then checks to see if the section is empty, and if the section is empty, it just looks up any section, and if not, it looks up for the page in the section. The client code over here just says connect to my server, read in, print out the screen, follow script for 7 to standard out, and then I want a man for socket 2. So this might work, and I'm going to pipe to Les. And there you see I can get, you know, my account page.
Networking!
Woot.
This is really fast.
I know, right? You can probably do this over Telnet.
So can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Can you run over JSON or something?
You can hit you with a glass. Hold on, wait a minute. They're in the IP over XML spam.
There is
IP over XML. Has JSON actually been formalized into an RFC yet? Is it like RFC 78,233? JSON over IP, but
it's
coming. The Rails guys are working on it, I assure you.
No, the Rails guys don't work on anything simple.
Exactly. JSON over IP. I cheated up.
No. No matter how simple it starts out, they fuck it up.
All right, so that's it. Ike and I were going to do a live demo of a chat program that uses the Write program, because the Write program is vastly underused.
So is Talk.
But we decided against it, yeah.
Talk, watch.
Or NetWall, where you just, you know, have a TCP server running as root, and then you just you mega-wall that shit. Anyway, so that's it. Any questions? Not the toolkit.
Does anyone use SCTP?
I've played around with it. I think you wanted a record question.
Can you repeat your question?
SCTP. How fun is it?
It depends on what problem are you trying to solve. If you would like a sequence in order packet-based protocol, then you want SCTP, and if you want to do phone calls, you want SCTP. If you want to replace TCP with it, you will suffer a performance hit. On certain Intel hardware, it's slightly faster because they have better support for hardware checksums. But I mean, SCTP is an interesting protocol, but you have to have a reason to use it.
It was not a question of reasoning before, like how well supported is it by different operating systems. Isn't there some switch the network here has to participate in some of the?
Yeah, SCTP is
a
it's
above IP.
Oh, okay. So it gives you some really cool features, but generally those features are so much better. The thing that's really cool about it is you get in order delivery of sequence pack. You get a functional sequence pack. So if you don't want to have to deal with your boundaries, you know, you don't want to have to set your boundaries when you're writing feature. Right, it's great for that.
Have you seen Google's proposal for SPDY?
Which one?
SPDY.
Super SDY, yeah. I have not read the proposal. I've seen the news.
It's small as far as like what.
Well, I recently saw enough.
Yeah, but it's an application level protocol, which is a different argument.
Is in like previous
decade.
Yeah. It's being worked on.
I thought that SCTP had some features for being able to do signal transmission and multiple delivery.
You can make use of multiple NICs, though, right?
You
on each side?
Group, you can do a lot of grouping and ungrouping of connections.
And I hear that they're putting SCTC into Python 3. They'll finally have it. Anyway, so there are some sites about DJB software. Use it at your own risk. Well, actually, like with DJB DNS, is actually kind of a fun read. No joke. But
who maintains it? I haven't looked at that in 10 years. So who maintains it?
I don't know.
Does it maintain?
It's maintained. You can update it.
So it's QML.
Yeah, QML's maintained.
Yeah.
Sorry. Patch 1.03.
The biggest patch ever.
Anyway, thanks, guys.
Anybody else in public? Public?
Tablet? No.